you feel alive. And what that means is if you can compare when you are the energy, when you are with this person. And so if you've never felt alive with someone in a romantic way, then perhaps you've never been in love. And it's hard to explain what feeling alive means if you haven't experienced it. So that's why I say when you know, you know. Like when you feel alive, you'll know it's different.
I'm Julie Bullitt. I've been a family therapist for over 30 years.
I'm David Bullitt. I've been a divorce and family lawyer for more than 35 years.
Together, we have been married for more than 37 years.
In our professional practices, the two of us have been witnesses to individuals and families struggling with life's most difficult challenges. In this podcast, we will talk about the conversations we have had,
the conversations we should have had,
and those that every relationship needs to have in order to find success, happiness, and fulfillment.
This is Conversations for Couples,
the podcast. Welcome back to Conversations for Couples,
the podcast.
We're straying tonight back into the field of mental health. I'm one of those people who thinks they're a therapist because they're married to a therapist. And today I find myself in between two mental health professionals. We have with us the amazing Jamie Bronstein. Jamie is a licensed clinical social worker, a relationship therapist, speaker, author, and a podcast host. She's all over the airwaves and in media nationwide. She's appeared in People Magazine, USA Today, The New York Times, on NBC News, ABC, CBS, and on air live with one of our favorite old former hosts. I think he's maybe still is a host, Ryan Seacrest. So she's been named, I'm going to make sure I got this right, the number one relationship coach transforming lives by Yahoo Finance. I'm going to ask how Yahoo Finance got into that, but that's a question for a little bit. Jamie, thank you for coming, and we're glad to have you here.
Thank you guys so much for interviewing me today. You guys were on my podcast, and we had such a wonderful conversation, so I'm so looking forward to this one.
We are too, and we're excited to be asking the questions instead of answering them this time. And I want to start out with the how you got here, the why for what you do and how you got here. You know, you do a lot in the field of mental health. Your reach is significant. You know, and Julie's a licensed clinical social worker who has, I think, more of a traditional type practice. Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about, you know, the how and whys for you.
So I have always been philanthropic. I was feeding the homeless when I was little, working with the elderly. I was a coach for Special Olympics. So it's in me. I also luckily saw my parents being very generous, giving people. So it's always been in me, part of my life. Then it was really my first psychology class in high school that I actually learned about psychology and could not get enough. It was very life-changing for me because I felt like it was giving me the answers to why people acted the way that they did. And to me, that was just amazing. So it was the love of psychology. And then I didn't necessarily know that I was going to do this for my career. I was a psych major in college. But then it just hit me. It was about a year or two after college that this is what I want to do for my life. Now, the whole relationship thing didn't happen until, so I've been doing this for over 20 years. It was about halfway through that I realized that the clients that came in that were singles, couples, breakups, and divorces were the ones that I really gravitated to the most. And so ever since then, I've just dedicated my career to helping these populations.
Yeah, very cool. That's very cool. So I get asked this question, so I'm just going to pass it on to you. Is, you know, what is the number one issue that you see, or is there a number one issue, a most common issue with couples?
So before you answer that, this is a perfect example of why Julie doesn't follow. There's a little script that you can't see, Jamie. So this is a perfect example of why she jumps way ahead, but yeah. I'm going to Let you answer the question, let you have a pass, and we'll get back to you.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know what? I can relate to Julie because I'm a rebel also. And okay. I don't follow the rules.
He makes a whole outline, and I just kind of come in and go wherever my brain wants to.
Okay.
So I'm curious about what you would say comes into your office, like most common issues.
Yeah, so I feel like the cliche answer is communication issues. My answer is not that. it might be, it's definitely tied in because it's behind the scenes. But when people ask me, it's a little bit of a different question. Why do people, why are people struggling or sometimes end up not together? What are the main issues? I would say there's two main things. It's either infidelity or financial issues.
Okay, fair enough.
Because infidelity, trust issues, which is lack of communication, and lack of fulfillment and lack of a lot of things. And also, I think that financial issues is a very underrated thing that people don't talk about and is one of the main reasons why couples are struggling.
Mm. Yeah, you know, what I found was interesting along those same lines in your book is you talk about, I think you raised this question early on, which is, you know, why do people who are otherwise incredibly smart, intelligent, well-functioning, high-functioning, successful in life have so little success or such a lack of success when it comes to relationships? And it's interesting because that shows up in my divorce practice with regularity. So I'm interested to hear your perspective.
Yes. So it all goes back to unresolved issues. Everyone has them and they don't have to be a big deal. An unresolved issue is anything that is disturbing your peace. So there are things from childhood, like attachment issues or abandonment issues, trust issues, anything that has happened. Somebody could have said something to you in the sandbox in kindergarten, whenever you're in the sandbox. A parent could have said something to you. You could have had all these relationship issues in the past that you never have looked at. So the reason why people keep showing up in relationships that are intelligent, maybe they're not, their emotional intelligence hasn't really kicked in. They haven't looked at it. And you do need to heal. There's a lot of healing that needs to happen if you don't want to keep repeating. In my book, I have one of the dating personas. I have seven of them. One is called the repeater. People that keep repeating the same, you meet the same person over and over and over again because you're not being insightful. A lot of times people blame and they don't own, they don't take ownership. Not that anybody's right or wrong, but if you are the common denominator and it keeps not working, maybe look inside and everything is healable, which is the wonderful news. And that's what I help my clients to do. I help them heal.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I don't know if what you see, Julie, in your practice, whether it's similar, but what I have seen many times is, you know, I represent a lot of high worth type folks, and many of them are married to people who came from a very different background, and they fell in love with them for whatever reason. They fell in love with them, but then as the relationship develops, mm-hmm. you know, one of them is on a different plane than the other.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting because I think you were talking about, you know, the wounds, the hurts. And we talk a lot about the triggers, right? Which is basically the same thing, sort of your wounds that you have within you. But then what gets triggered by your partner when they don't come home on time or they didn't call you when they were supposed to, or you found out that they bought something without telling you, right? All of those things start to come back up. So how do you help couples, you know, heal within the relationship? Or are you sometimes separating them saying like, hey, you need to go do your own work and then come back?
Well, a lot of issues in the relationship surround not being empathetic towards each other, not listening towards each other and not listening to each other. And people aren't feeling seen and heard and validated. So what I help couples to do is to be able, sometimes I have them make a pact. I promise that I will listen to what you're saying. I'm not going to tell you not to feel that way because that's one of the problems. People don't say how they're feeling because they're scared the person's going to leave. They're scared the person's going to not listen or judge, etc. So when couples start to be able to freely share how they're truly feeling and the other person really listens and doesn't judge and doesn't tell them not to feel that way, that's how, and can actually start to understand each other and have compassion. Oh, now I understand why you're like this, because when you were little, that happened and it's still affecting you today. So bringing compassion and empathy into the relationship is so helpful. But But the thing is, both parties need to have the willingness to make a relationship work in order for it to work. So mm-hmm. if one person's already out the one foot out the door, mm-hmm. it's never going to work regardless.
Yeah. What about couples that have either one or both of them have some neurodiversity? And I'm talking specifically, you know, autism spectrum, right? Because I've worked with a lot of folks, a lot of couples that have one or both, and the perspective taking, the empathy is really challenging. How, you know, what have you seen, and how have you helped couples when that's an issue?
Yeah, I mean, obviously depends on the spectrum, you know, how bad the issue is, or how much of a lack of maybe the picking up on social cues and things like that, or lack of empathy. But once again, it is about compassion. Now, let's say I'm working with a couple and one person literally cannot get to that point of having empathy, I don't know. I mean, every couple is different. It would be up to that other person in the relationship to decide if they choose to be in that relationship. Because, I mean, we all have different love languages. Like, sometimes people need to hear loving things or feel physical touch or gifts or whatever it is. So it depends. Every couple is so different. So it would depend on each couple. And also the severity and the specific neurodiversity. But neurodiversity, like ADHD, autism spectrum, Asperger's, it is so common also. And that's mm-hmm. and people are getting diagnosed as adults. So it is – I love that there's so much more awareness. If anybody's interested, there's a documentary by Scott Steindorf. He just did a documentary that I'm going to be in. Separate from this, but he did a whole documentary because he's autistic and he didn't know until he was an adult, and his three children are autistic, very interesting, high functioning. So I learned a lot by watching that documentary also.
Interesting. You talk about using your intuition and not be fearful of using your intuition in a relationship. Tell us what you mean by that and why some people have their intuition is wrong half the time. So tell me a little bit about what you're getting at there.
Yeah. So intuition throughout the whole span of as you're looking for who you're going to spend your life with and then in the relationship. So when you're looking for the person, that's about trusting. Am I having fun? Do I feel safe with this person? You know, as you're going through that journey, and trusting that, and also not needing to ask a million people what they think. It's really trusting yourself. When you're in the relationship, it's similar because it's about trusting how you're feeling, trusting your voice, using your voice, not being scared to speak up. Also, if you are picking up on some shady behavior, let's say just for example, to trust that. Now, there's a fine line when we talk about, people ask me this all the time, they send me DMs. How do I know if this is my trust issue from my past relationship, or is he really cheating, or, you know, because he didn't come home until 4 a.m. And so we need to, and then I, if it's a client or a DM or whatever it is. So that's where your intuition really comes in, and also why you need to heal. Because sometimes it's your intuition that something shady is going on, but maybe that guy was out with his buddies for a bachelor party and he's really a good guy, but because the last guy cheated, and then that causes problems. The lack of trust.
Right. Right. Yeah.
So how do when that person reaches out to you, or you're seeing that person in your office, how do you help them cut through that sort of, you know, complexity, which is what it is really? Is it because this is how I come to the table, or is it because what I'm seeing really is a red flag?
Yeah. So one of the ways that I help people to heal is I help them to identify what is that negative narrative? What's the story? And a lot of times, so let's, And then we do this whole compassionate self-forgiveness. So, for example, I forgive myself for buying into the misbelief that men are untrustworthy. I can't trust men because that's somebody's story. And so then I have the client close their eyes, look within, take a moment, and they connect with themselves. And this is actually part of their intuition also. Because intuition doesn't have to be woo-woo. It's just your connection with yourself. So they close their eyes and they connect with themselves. They connect with the truth. Because I ask, what is the truth? The truth is, of course, not all men are untrustworthy. There are wonderful men in this world that are beyond trustworthy.
Yeah, you're talking to one right now.
As I was saying that, I was thinking that you were thinking that. I was thinking it's so interesting.
You have good intuition. And there we go.
I was thinking that, and you were thinking that you married a man who's trustworthy.
Yes, exactly. And I was going to say is that one of the things that I talk about when I met David was the difference between him and all my other relationships and guys that I had dated. Right. So one of the things that happened was I met him at a party. He took my number and he called the next day. And there was no game playing. And he was like, hey, do you want to go out? And he showed up when he said he was going to show up. And that was a very different, scenario than other guys that I'd waited by the phone that was supposed to call. I never heard from, or I would hear from them much later than they were supposed to call me. And so I guess that's what you're talking about, that intuition that this is different. This is right. This feels good.
But how do you know, how did you know that it wasn't just because we had a really fun time, our first date?
Because you called the next day.
That's the question.
Because you said you would call the next day.
I know.
And then you showed up the next day.
No,
she's actually, right. And that's a really big thing in relationships, showing over telling. Action. It's so cliche, but actions speak louder than words. When you can feel safe, because what I'm hearing from you is that he made you feel safe. He didn't make you, your nervous system constantly, when is he going to call? Does he like me? And I do think that, especially at the beginning of a relationship, there needs to be like a little mystery. Like, you don't want someone to be obsessed with you, and you don't want to be obsessed with somebody too fast because you really don't know the person. At the same time, we're just going to talk women here. Like, women, it's also a very chivalrous thing for a man to make a woman feel, to pursue a woman and to make her feel safe. These are roles. These are evolutionary roles. I'm a very old school girl. And I just interviewed John Gray for the summit that we can talk about. Oh boy. And we talked a lot about this, that women, this is what women want to feel, and men love to do it. A masculine man wants to pursue. It makes him happy to make the woman happy.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah. And I mean, it is also allowing yourself to trust the process, right? Like, if I was like, oh, well, he called me. He seems like he called me the next day. Is he desperate, or is he, like,
what's wrong
with something, or what's wrong with him? Exactly. So, it was also, like you said, my intuition was like, no, this is a good guy. He's, he's like decent. He's good, and not like looking for the negative, I guess. Cause I think so many times in relationships, we shine the light on things we don't like, cause we're afraid.
Right. Yeah, and then it actually can become a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you're saying, wait, this is too good to be true, maybe I can't trust him, maybe he's a player and he has this with all the girls. Like, yeah, whatever it is, the story that you're making up, once again, fear, false evidence appearing real. Whatever that story is, that fear can become a self-fulfilling prophecy, and just through the law of attraction or if you don't even have to call it the law of attraction, you can call it the self-fulfilling prophecy. But that is what happens when you start making up stories.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Go ahead. Did you?
Yeah. I just wanted to ask you, what are your favorite kind of couples to work with? Like, when they walk in the door, you're like, yes, this is like, I love this.
I'll tell you my least favorite first.
Okay.
So there have been some situations. An HSP, a highly sensitive person. I'm a Pisces. So I don't love working with, high conflict couples, and I'm talking like almost to the point of domestic abuse. I don't work with couples that are currently in a domestic abuse relationship because they need to be separated before they can actually work on themselves, work on the relationship. But anyhow, when couples just, you know, when they can't, you can't even work on anything because there's too much conflict. So, but couple, to answer your question. So you're asking what couples do I love working with the most? But in what do you mean? Like, what other issues do I like working with, or what do you,
can you be more specific? Just kind of like the ones where, you know, like, okay, oh, okay, I've seen this before, and all we have to do is kind of like get through, you know, like the empathy piece or reflective listening, or like you're kind of like excited because you, like, you know that you can help them.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm very intuitive. So using my intuition, I can tell very quickly if a couple is supposed to stay together. And so when I know that about them, when I know that there is love there that can be found again, that can be brought back, that is when I love it, because it does happen. Because I get to watch the transformation, and oh, it's so beautiful. It's so beautiful to see.
So, but the other side, tell us the other side, when you have a couple that shows up in your office and you're like, oh, they're not going to make it, or this isn't good. What do you do with that?
Yeah. Well, I just tell them they should separate and have a great day. I don't. I don't.
That's interesting.
No. Because here's the thing. Whether you're an individual seeking therapy or you are a couple, whatever you're doing in life, you need to navigate that journey. And the wonderful thing, even if a couple comes to me and I might have a feeling they're not going to end up together, it is a learning and healing experience for both of them individually, regardless. So you're going to learn about yourself, and you're going to heal individually and together, whether you stay together or not. And the wonderful thing is that whether the couple stays together or not, what I set them up for, let's say they don't stay together, is I set them up for a healthy relationship post-relationship, healthy relationship together post-relationship.
Yeah, I'm listening to you guys, and I do some of this. I have some of the same communications, but from a different angle. You know, so when people come to see me, I'm probably one of the few that I'm aware of anyway, divorce lawyers that do this. And that is, I will always tell someone who's coming to see me for the first time, I want to make sure that they understand what the process looks like, understand what they're getting into, what they're going to lose, that the grass isn't always greener, what it's going to cost. But also, I remind them that they chose this person for a reason, right? There was something there, whether it was 2 years ago or 20 years ago or however long ago it was. And before you embark on this path, which is always painful, even in the best of circumstances, is that reason still there? And if it is, you should take a pause. You know, some people, there's strategic reasons why they should file for divorce, why they shouldn't, why they should wait, why they shouldn't. But I still have this discussion with them when it comes to the emotional piece of that relationship. And that's kind of what you guys are talking about.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, we, you know, when I work with couples, and I'm sure Jamie, you do the same, which is part of it is to try to get them back to the beginning. Like, what was it about that person? And that can help with the connection and getting back to some foundational stuff.
Yeah. And I always do ask why did you choose this person? And it is most of the time especially when it is high conflict-ish, It does soften them. It helps them to get into a different energy, because it does help them, because remembering those things, it helps them to move forward and to get closer together again. What's also interesting is when I have asked that question, there have been times where it's very clear that maybe one person never really felt it. And that's hard for the other person to hear.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you talk about, I read a little bit about the concept of the one, finding the one. What is it? How do you find it? How do you know that you found it? So tell us a little bit about that. I don't mean for you to talk too much about your book so people get the information for free, but I think it's important, you know, as that people consider this when they're looking to get into a relationship.
So I have a short list, and some of it might sound a little cheesy, but it's very real to me. One of the things is you feel alive. And what that means is if you can compare when you are with this person. And so if you've never felt alive with someone in a romantic way, then perhaps you've never been in love. So, and it's hard to explain what feeling alive means if you haven't experienced it. So that's why I say when you feel alive, you'll know it's different. Also, when you feel peace in your heart. And what that means is that you don't have to talk yourself into or out of anything. When you're dating and there's lots of chaos in your mind and there's chaos in the heart and you're struggling and there's doubts, that's not a peaceful heart. But when your heart can relax and everything just relaxes and it's a knowing that it feels right, that's another way. I believe that, what were you going to say?
No, so it's not like there's a checklist. It's more of a, you know it when you see it, you know it when you feel it.
Yeah, but other things like, I think that when you are intrigued with someone, mm-hmm. when you want to know, when you're constantly learning about each other, you know, that's a wonderful thing to have forever. And this is underrated. And this is because I also have like list for what makes good relationships. You have fun together. Fun is you can't have fun with everybody. It's very you got to have that rapport. And fun is very underrated. As
I couldn't agree more. And then if you can have fun with your partner, you have like built in fun all the time, right? Like life is serious. Like there's so many things that are hard about it that if you can go through your day being silly, like I was in my office and David was outside like doing something and he like peeked into my office pretending he was like a
I almost mooned her, but I decided not to.
Peeping Tom or something like that. And I just was like laughing that he was like, you know, looking, you know, like not very nonchalant. But anyway, so like building in that fun and having that fun with your partner, you're so lucky to have that because you can get it a lot, right? It's happening a lot for you. So I wanted to ask you sort of like turn it a little bit. So you do your relationship work and it's hard stuff. You're working with couples. How does that impact your personal relationships? I'm curious about that.
So I remember a million years ago when I started doing this job, and I remember people asking me kind of a lot, how are you a therapist? Isn't being a therapist hard? Because doesn't it make you depressed or sad? And I always say, well, I leave work at work and I have this ability to separate my life from other people's lives. In a very positive response to your question is I get inspired a lot, actually. I get emotional a lot and I love those moments. I've cried. I mean, I don't know. You probably studied this when you were in graduate school also, not like bawling, but when you get emotional in a session and you like your client or clients see some tears in your eyes, it's very beneficial for the client because they definitely feel seen and heard, or they just know that you're being affected in a positive way. Some sort, you get it. Maybe they're talking about something sad and you get emotional, because that happens a lot also. Like if someone is talking about something sad and then I'm relating it, whether it's subconscious or consciously, to something in my life, I'm touched by it, or it brings back something sad. So this work does affect me, but I think because I'm such a feeling person, I'm a Pisces, a highly sensitive person. I love the feeling part of it. And so let's say, I mean, there have been times, I remember this one time years ago, I also was pregnant, so I don't know if this is, I was extra emotional, but there was this individual, he didn't come in as a couple, he was still single, he eventually got married, but he was a individual client, and he was just, oh God, he was just talking about this relationship that was not working and how much he wanted it to work. And I was relating it to my first love, this guy that I was in love with years ago. And he walked out of the room and I just started bawling. I was like, why is life so tragic? Because to me, and this is a little tangential, but what makes me sad sometimes is when I hear stories about the ones that got away. And I think that it's very tragic in life. And so that's why I wrote this book, because I want people to make the best decision you possibly can to marry the right person for you. And when you do find somebody that you feel like is the right person, you need to tell them so that they don't. Obviously, if it's not supposed to work, it's not supposed to work. But a lot of times relationships don't work because people are too scared to be vulnerable and share other feelings. Yeah.
Agreed on that.
Do you
that.
Have anything to tell me?
I've told you all of it.
Okay.
Just asking. Yeah. So, you know, I always share this with couples that I work with, is like, we teach the lessons we need to learn. Right. And I'm very aware of, you know, the relationship stuff that David and I put out and how I have to show up. Right. Like, our relationship is not perfect. We do fight. I say things I shouldn't. He says things we shouldn't. But I really do feel like an obligation to walk the talk and that doesn't, I never really lose sight of that. Like, you know, we work really hard at our relationship.
Yeah. And to be honest with you, Jamie, you know, I don't know how you feel about the work that you do, but for us, at least for me, it makes me hyper-focus on exactly the way Julie's talking about, which is I might react differently now because of what I'm trying to do or what I'm trying to communicate to folks than I did, you know, 25 years ago when I would just, you know, pop off for no reason. I have the ability to stop and think. And I think that sometimes the work can get in the way of what you do at home. But also in this case, I think the work has helped us. Not that we're in therapy with you, but I mean, I think the work has helped us in terms of our relationship being healthy.
Yeah, I mean, it's helped me in all aspects of my life. I oftentimes, with saying no names, I oftentimes refer to client stories, you know, what stories that were inspirational or learning, or yeah, I mean, sometimes a client will say something that I had never heard, and so I'm like, wow, I never thought about that, you know. So we learn from our clients, and I love that you say talking the walk. Sometimes
toxic problem that Julie has.
I didn't say talking the walk.
We knew what we were saying, yes.
But also, the thing that people need to know about therapists is that we are people. And like you just said, like sometimes like you might yell or whatever. My thing recently has been when I'm interviewed for something and people are like, so tell us about your work-life balance. And like, I mean, when I wrote this book, my family was very, very supportive, and because I was not around as much. Or sometimes, you know, if I'm working on a project, and also like exercising and doing all these things like that I know are important, I don't necessarily do all the time. I try to eat as healthy as possible, but I don't. Like, so we are human, just like everybody else is, and we're not perfect, and we're learning all the time, and we're improving and getting better. Like David, like you said, that 25 years ago you reacted differently than you do now.
I think that's a really important lesson for people to hear. Mm-hmm. that you know, even though you might be in a position, I don't want to say authority, that doesn't sound, but maybe expertise is a better word, you know, where someone comes to you for advice or for guidance, that doesn't mean that you don't also need advice and guidance on occasion. And I think that your book, Manifesting, is a really good read for folks to sort of learn some of the lessons that we've been talking about. Jamie, and I don't want to keep you for the rest of the evening. I know you're in the Midwest and you've got a family, but and I'm going to put folks the link to her book in our show notes, but if anyone wants to sort of read more about you, learn more about you, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah. So my website is very easy. It's therelationshipexpert.com. Very easy, straightforward. My Instagram, kind of like that, is @therelationshipexpert, but there's no E at the beginning of expert. So the relationship, letter XPERT. Podcast, Love Talk Live. My book is Manifesting. You can find it if you go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble, put in Jamie Bronstein, Manifesting, you'll find it. And also, like I mentioned, if you go to the Ready for Love Summit, because that's going to be happening in February, it's a free summit. I'm going to have a bunch of speakers, and the bullets are going to be guests.
Yes, we speakers. Are. Looking forward to it.
If you go to readyforlovesummit.com, you can sign up and get all the information for that summit. And I'm so excited about that.
Awesome. Well, we're looking forward to talking to you, where you'll be the one asking the questions again.
Yes.
Again next time. Jamie, it's been an absolute pleasure having you. I got to get a lawyer here at some point in time to sort of balance things out.
Yeah, we will.
Folks, if you have any questions, any comments, please drop them to us. We can forward things to Jamie if you need to. As always, you can find us on Instagram, on Facebook, all major social media platforms, YouTube and all the rest, @TheBullets. And this has been Conversations for Couples.
The podcast.
See you next time. Julie Bullet is a professionally licensed clinical social worker and family therapist. David Bullet is a divorce and family lawyer. Julie is not your therapist, and David is not your lawyer. This podcast is meant for educational and entertainment purposes only.